Looking over at your kid, thinking, you should probably go. You start the fights early, where we're going to go eat after church. I mean, think of where your mind is, the serious business of God, the serious business of where you're going to eat. And all of a sudden, somebody starts getting stabbed a pew away. Can you imagine living? I mean, how would you go out to your car? You know what our normal conversation is? What would you learn in Sunday school? Critiques of the music. How'd you explain to your children what they saw? A son stabbing his father. Do you know how horrific that is? Just awful. And, you know, I guess it's my job to talk about these things, but, you know, if you're a church of any size, two or more to thousands, you better have plans for such a thing. I mean, we can learn something from this church in Kentucky. That church had a plan. That church had a security team. They responded in an instant. Hopefully the dad's alive. We don't know. Hopefully we're going to get some more details as to why his son, a 25-year-old or so, whatever he is, he was a young man, why he would choose to stab his father on the day they're visiting a church for the first time, let alone during the altar call. I just think there's more to this story than we know, but what we know is horrific enough. So our prayers for them. What an extraordinary firsthand account. All right, give me some Olympic music. You know, as I have said, this has been, and I don't know if it's because it is or because I'm experiencing it with my children. I mean, I remember the first Olympics I remember were the 72 games in Munich. And I know for my son, he'll remember this Olympics for the rest of his life. So I don't know if it's because I'm going through it with them or we're just seeing some of the greatest performances ever, but I have never enjoyed an Olympic game as much as I have the Rio games. And it isn't all just patriotism. I mean, who can't enjoy Usain Bolt winning a gold medal in the 100 meter for the third straight Olympics and doing so with a 9.81? Tommy, was I the only Titans fan that was thinking, you put some pads on this guy, a Titans jersey, he's bound to get open?
They've tried that before, and it's never really worked.
He's big.
Oh, he's big enough, but there's something about running in pads that's far different.
I don't know.
Remember,
do you realize if he ran a fly, well, you'd have to launch immediately because the guy could, by the time the ball, I mean, you'd have to throw it 80 yards. He could be there in 5-6 seconds.
Well, remember, Darryl Green was always the fastest man in the NFL, and he didn't look that fast in pads.
Yeah, that's true. Anyway, that is a 7th Olympic gold overall for Usain Bolt. And lost in all of this is Justin Gatlin, who won silver for the United States in another terrific Olympic and matchup with Usain Bolt for him, but coming up silver. Meanwhile, South Africa's Wade van Niekerk won the gold in the 400 meters. Why do I bring that up? He shattered Michael Johnson's 17-year-old world record in that event. And so he gets the new world record and the gold medal. Simone Biles, what can you say? She's not just the best gymnast this year. She's the best gymnast anyone's ever seen and scores like no one's ever seen. And another first for her. For the first time, an Olympic women's competitor won the gold in the vault. And that becomes her third gold medal. She has a chance to win two more, and all indications are she is the prohibitive favorite in both events, the balance beam and the floor. And Madison Koshim won the silver in the uneven bars. It has been a really tough Olympic game for Gabby Douglas. Probably what is unfair for Gabby Douglas is just how good this women's team is. And then, of course, the rule that only two can go in to the all-around, where she would have been third but unable to participate, then finally gets a chance at her own moment alone and has an uncharacteristic error on the uneven bars, does not medal. So it's Madison Koshin who gets silver, and Russian got Aliya, I think that's how I say it, Mustafina. From Russia, got the gold in that. U.S. men's and women's basketball teams, total dominance. Americans' men team beat France 197 in their closest call. They improved to 5-0 and move into quarterfinal play. For the women, they also are 5-0 after a 105-62 romp of China. They head and undefeated into the quarterfinal round. Andy Murray, didn't Andy Murray win the Wimbledon as well? I think he did. This guy's having a heck of a year. Talk about going to bed feeling good about yourself. Yeah, I won Wimbledon. I won gold at Rio. And then the gold goes to Justin Rose in golf, and that's the first appearance for golf in after a 112-year absence. Now, as you know, America didn't send a lot of our golfers because they're busy procreating. Yeah, so he won Wimbledon and the gold. That's a great year. I shot a 79 at Forest Crossing. I mean, these people are incredible. But it was Matt Kuchar's final round that got him the bronze medal behind Henrik Stenson and Justin Rose, which really was an amazing final round showing. Kind of stole the show a little bit. So Matt Kuchar, getting a bronze medal for the United States. And apparently Kuch has no procreation in his future. He was the only one that risked Zika to compete for a medal, and he gets it. All right, so overall, the real story is our dominance. 69 medals overall. 26 gold, 21 silver, 22 bronze. Next closest countries, China and Great Britain heading into today with 45. China with 45, Great Britain with 38. And then in the gold medal count at 26, literally almost doubling up all the other nations. We have 26 gold medals. China and Great Britain are tied with 15. Russia's in third with just 9. This has been a completely dominant U.S. Olympic story. And when you look for stars, well, Michael Phelps, storybook finish, Simone Biles, Ledecky. I made this prediction last week and nobody remembers it. But when she was in the, I think it was the 200 meter or 400 meter, I can't remember. She's so dominant. I said, can you imagine? She's in the 800 meter. She's going to win by a length of a pool. And she did this weekend. So Katie Ledecky, obviously a huge story. Simone Biles, obviously a huge story. Michael Phelps, a huge story. But really the entire U.S. Olympic team is the huge story. All right, quickly in other sports, if you're not a Titans fan, get on board. This team looks solid to me. Tommy's shaking his head. No, he's wrong. Trust me. They have put the pieces together. You got a very good young offensive line that loves to run block. You got two beasts, DeMarco Murray, 6 rushes for 93 yards and a touchdown. Derrick Henry, yeoman's, workmanlike performance, 10 rushes, 74 yards and a touchdown. And the Titans win their opener against San Diego 27-10. Next up, Cam Newton and the Carolina Panthers for week 2 of preseason, Nissan Stadium this coming Saturday. I know I'm going to be there. Now, the Sounds won Friday night handily, 12-7. Saturday, 5-2. Stumbled a bit yesterday, losing 6-3 to Reno. The final game of that 4-game series is tonight at 7:05, First Tennessee Park. The Sounds alone are a reason to go. Kroger Monday Family 4-Pack, where you get 4 tickets, 4 dogs, 4 drinks, $44. Add to that, Hall of Famer Ricky Henderson signing autographs and making appearance. Arguably the greatest day. And one of the greatest baseball players and certainly one of the greatest base dealers of all time. Ricky Henderson making an appearance, just another reason to go to the Sounds game tonight. So all good news on the sports front, and that's sports on the Talk Station. It's 11:16, 88 degrees, feels like 95, on our way to a high of 92. We are information-fueled, opinion-driven, Super Talk, 99.7 WTN. Anybody here seen our old friend President Obama? Can you tell me where he's gone? I'll cover that next segment. His family has to be hurting, and for them, we're sorry. But the police chief wouldn't identify the officer who shot Smith, but he did say he is black. So again, none of this, somebody sent me an email earlier. Why aren't people covering this? Obama's releasing people from, again, we cover all this stuff. I mean, I'm sure there's rhetorical questions, but there are answers to all of this. So your first question ought to be, it was a black officer shooting a 23-year-old black man because he had committed a crime, because he was resisting arrest and fleeing a scene, and he turned with a gun in his hand to aim it at the officer. There's a very, very good, reasonable explanation why that family is mourning. Their son's a criminal, and he had a gun in his hand, and he pointed it at an officer. That's a recipe to get anybody shot and killed. I mean, you want to die today, that's all you got to do. I assure you. But it doesn't fit the narratives, does it? And the narratives don't seem to even care. So you got a mob of people. There's funding from George Soros for Black Lives Matter. Black Lives Matter is anti-capitalism. Black Lives Matter is, you know, all about complete cultural chaos, lawlessness and disorder, and probably rooted in the ultimate sin of envy. And you got a lot of stragglers along. Now, there are some people that want to have their voice heard and want some injustices looked into. And they're tagging along, too. But from George Soros and the money to the Black Lives Matter and the anti-capitalist, anti-American movement and agenda, they don't care if the officer was black or white. They don't care if the guy had a gun or not. And I assure you, the new Black Panthers certainly don't care. And any radical Islamist characters that are teaming up with them, they don't care. What they want is anarchy. But yes, you ought to raise your hand and make sure everybody understands crystal clear. In Ferguson, they rioted. Why? A kid that robbed a convenience store was trying to take Officer Wilson's gun and kill him with it. Oh, but he's unarmed. You know, we had an instance last week, and I brought this up on Friday. And it should challenge these false narratives. How does an unarmed man in New York kill somebody? By grabbing a police officer's gun and shooting him. But Michael Brown was trying to grab a gun and kill an officer, and when he ended up getting killed, he was considered an unarmed victim. Now, in this case, it's really laughable in terms of the narrative. Nothing's funny about a 23-year-old losing his life. He made some bad choices, and the wages of those choices was death. He was committing crimes. He was fleeing officers, and he turned with a gun to shoot an officer. And that officer, who just so happened to be black, and it doesn't matter that he is, killed him. Justified. But nobody cares. For whatever reason, they're rioting. For whatever reason, they're making demands. For whatever reason, other innocent people are being harmed. So it doesn't matter if it's Baltimore, it doesn't matter if it's Ferguson, it doesn't matter what the narrative is, doesn't matter what the race of the officer is or the race of the victim or what he was doing in his rap sheet. This is second verse, same as the first. And we've made no progress in this conversation whatsoever. Perhaps because both sides are not reasonable. And I don't mean that both are wrong. What I'm saying is one side is completely unreasonable. Meanwhile, in Louisiana, massive flooding over the weekend. At least 4 people are dead, more than 10,000 in shelters, with officials saying that more than 20,000 people had to be rescued, as well as hundreds of animals. President Obama hasn't made any public comments on this, although he did initiate and sign federal funding for assistance to be made available. Meanwhile, we turn to Queens, where after the leader of a New York mosque and his associate were murdered on Saturday following afternoon prayers, police are saying they don't yet have a motive for the killings, but members of the Bangladeshi community served by the mosque are worried it was anti-Muslim hate crime. Isn't it amazing? Every time, and I'm not trying to stir anything up here, just as a footnote, isn't it amazing when you clearly have an Islamist individual carrying out an obvious act of terrorism? We're told by the president, we're told by law enforcement, we're told by the Muslim community, don't rush to judgment. But an imam gets shot, and of course we rush to judgment. This is hatred towards Muslims. This is a hate crime. We know. We have all the facts we need to know. Now, the strangest part was the imam, who doesn't appear to have any background other than a really good guy, a really good family man, and one of these very Americanized, peace-loving Islamic mosques. And he's killed. Now, I don't think anybody should be speculating. I don't think anybody should be jumping to conclusions. But, you know, one thing you could speculate as much as hate crime is, was it a Muslim terrorist? And why? Because ISIS is calling on Muslims to kill peace-loving, religious, westernized imams and Muslims. Purge them. Oh, you're going to find millions and millions of Christians killed, millions and millions of Hindus killed, millions and millions of Jews killed throughout a 14-year jihad. But you know you're going to find killed the most? Other Muslims. It should be noted for the record, it is possible this was a Islamist Muslim killing one for being an apostate to true Islam. And then his friend having $1,000 cash makes it even all the more strange. So a lot more to come on this. And it would be far too soon to speculate. And if somebody did it in a hate crime, regardless of their background, it's still a hate crime. And it's still wrong. And they'll be found and they'll be brought to justice. But as narratives go, as agendas go, well, we're all told to ignore case after case after case, and there are thousands virtually daily around the world, and certainly the oddities of the story, and certainly without any kind of inconsistency every other month in America, it seems. Never rush to judgment. But in this one, all the Muslim world is united. Rush to judgment. This is how unsafe Muslims are in America, how hated Muslims are in America. Now, when they do it, oh, that's not true Islam. That's one guy. That doesn't represent an entire religion. One guy commits a crime against a Muslim, and it's the entire country. The entire country feels this way. The entire country did this. And we're only 3 of 5 top stories into the day. We'll finish up after the news next. It's 11:31, 88, feels like 95, our hardy day 92.
Michael DelGiorno, weekdays at 9, Super Talk 99.7 WTN.
Nice of you to throw in a little promo liner for me, Tommy.
This is
11:40 in the morning, 20 minutes before 12 noon at Super Talk 99.7 WTN. It is still 88, feels like 95 on our way to a high today of 92. All right, we're in the middle of our top five stories of the day, and at number three comes Guccifer 2.0. That's right, Democratic lawmakers were urged by party leaders, Nancy Pelosi sounding the loudest alarm, this weekend to upgrade their online security after they and their staffers were flooded with vulgar and malicious emails and text messages following a data dump of their hacked contact information on Friday. Minority Leader Nancy Pelosi wrote to party members about the latest cyber attack on the Democratic Party during the election season, saying that she was changing her phone number and advised all of them to do the same. Politico also cited staffers as saying that they had received phishing emails and texts, trying to get them to click on a link with malware. The hacker, Guccifer 2.0, who researchers believe is a front for Russian hackers affiliated with the country's military intelligence, posted a spreadsheet containing emails and phone numbers for nearly every Democratic staffer. Guccifer 2.0 said the information came from a previous known hacking of the Democratic National Convention Campaign Committee. It's interesting how they are very concerned about their staff emails and not the national security secrets that may have been hacked on a Secretary of State's private phone, private server with less security than Gmail. Another inconvenient truth for the Democrats. Meanwhile, you've got the President of the United States. He's ginned up. You know, I mentioned in our opening segment, seems like yesterday, but unfortunately, it's about almost 8 years ago. If you picture Barack Obama as a cereal box, everybody loved the cover. He was just instant celebrity. So charming. So articulate. So charismatic. So good looking. So young. And the name of the cereal was Hope and Change. And everybody just loved it and got on board. And I was the only one that was reading the side, the ingredients. I had a similar situation. I went to Baskin-Robbins. Do you know that Baskin-Robbins, like McDonald's, like everyone, because of political correctness, they have to put the calories. So I'm sitting there and I'm getting ready to make my selection. And first of all, I pick out one of these big handmade cones dipped in chocolate with sprinkles. And I'm thinking, that's a big cone. You can't put one little teeny tiny scoop of ice cream in that big of a cone. I got to at least do two. Now, my tradition, of course, is Rocky Road. Can there be anything better? And so I was looking at this salted caramel. And I'm thinking, wouldn't salted caramel be a great addition to Rocky Road? Textures and flavors to go with this great cone dipped and sprinkled. And as I'm making my decision, I look down and it says 320 calories for 4 ounces. No, I'm hoping at that point that 4 ounces is like four scoops. I said, how many ounces are in a scoop? The woman knows where I'm headed with a smile on her face. She goes, that's a scoop. Don't you love that when they do this, they play the serving size game with you on the side too? And you're like, hey, this ain't bad. It's only 240 calories. Yes, and you just had 17 serving sizes. You're like, I just ate 2,000 calories? Thanks, cheese nips. I said, wow. So, and by the way, nobody feels the need to tell you what the calories are of this massive super cone I picked out, dipped in chocolate and sprinkles. Then I look and I glance over at the rocky road. I'm thinking, are you kidding me? This is going to be like 1,000 calories altogether? I got it anyway. But that's the difference between just letting your eyes and feelings do the judging versus, you know, reading the side. That's the cereal box color versus the side. I had a whole different feeling about that ice cream cone. But I wasn't basing it on its look, what it's going to taste like, how refreshing on a hot day, how delicious. So everybody else in talk radio, oh, this phenom spoke at a convention 2 years ago. Hope, change, handsome, articulate, part black, part white. He is the face of the world. What an extraordinary story. And I'm reading the side. And I'm reading Muslim father, Kenya. Muslim stepfather, Indonesia. He's Barack Hussein Obama. Then he's Barry Satoru. Then he's Barack Hussein Obama again. I'm thinking his mentors. Dangerous people, his pastor, dangerous black liberation theology. As a member of Congress, he was supporting an Islamic overthrow of an allied nation in Kenya. I'm thinking, you know, who is this agitator, divider, Marxist, crazed man? And then he wins, and then he does. And still nobody notices, still nobody discusses. So I was just curious, you know, with this weekend, you got a black officer shooting a 23-year-old black male. Why? He had a gun and he was pointing it at the officer and was going to shoot the officer, so the officer killed him. Well, that leads to rioting and chaos in Milwaukee. The president always comes forward to gin this kind of stuff up and fan its flames and play both sides. He just stays silent. Then in Louisiana, you got blow-up dolls and people dying and rescues and 10,000 in shelters, four dead. They crucified Bush for not getting to Louisiana quick enough after Katrina. Not a peep. And where is the president? Golfing in Martha's Vineyard. And what is he focused on? It's hot. Can you imagine with Milwaukee becoming Ferguson and Baltimore too? Businesses, six of them burned to the ground. People being harmed in riots. Massive rescues and death and flooding. And he's at Martha's Vineyard golfing. And he's complaining that it's hot. And concludes that because it's so hot in the Northeast, it could only equal global warming. And he utters the famous words again from his golf weekend that it's one of the most urgent challenges of our time. And I'm sitting there thinking to myself, $20 trillion of debt is a pretty urgent challenge. You've taken control of healthcare and destroyed it. We got another story today. It is the least, the least preferred insurance on the face of the earth. I'm thinking a nuclear Iran is going to be pretty challenging. I'm looking at another headline where the Afghan soldiers are unable to compete and hold off the Taliban. We're going to see Afghanistan fall right back into the hands of the Taliban, just like we saw Iraq fall right back into the hands of Al-Qaeda, only called ISIS this time. And nobody's noticing. This guy completely reversed the victories of two wars. Doubled the debt, over doubled it to $20 trillion. We've got everybody fighting with everybody. Gays with straights, blacks with whites, criminals with cops. men with women. He has completely divided up this entire country. He's got everybody fighting. We're $20 trillion in debt. The most predictable enemy is about to have a nuke. North Korea, a predictable enemy, already does. Russia and China, very predictable enemies, already do. And he's restored radical Islam throughout the Middle East and Africa. And from his rich Martha's Vineyard vacation, does he acknowledge people drowning in Louisiana? No. Does he acknowledge the unrest? A black officer actually shot a black man who was pointing a gun at him. Big story. And call for calm? Heck, I thought even the imam getting shot would get him out of the shadows. No. And when he finally surfaces from golf in his rich Martha's Vineyard vacation, what does he address? It's hot. I'm having, you know, it's ruining my golf time. Climate change has got to be one of our most urgent challenges. So I think you got your hands full with ISIS, sir. $20 trillion in debt and a nuclear Iran. That's just me. And then he starts bragging. We've made ambitious investments in clean energy. Yeah, Google Solyndra. It was ambitious, all right. And scandalous. And we've made ambitious reductions in carbon emissions. Do you know if you did everything, and you'd have to get rid of us, cows. But if you did everything that the president has done, if you buy their fake math, it makes a hundredth of a degree difference. And the reality is India isn't doing it. China isn't doing it. So what game are you playing? Now, everything he's done has had a tremendous impact on our debt and a tremendous impact on our economy. The president's quote is, we've made ambitious investments in clean energy and ambitious reductions in carbon emissions, even though we've proven there's no link between carbon and temperature rise. He said carbon pollution from energy is at a 25-year low. And all this while we're continuing to grow our economy. And nobody fact checks him. He's about to be the first president since Herbert Hoover not to see a 3% growth in GDP. Since 2005, the United States has gone a record 10 straight years, his entire two-term presidency, without a year in which growth reached a GDP increase of 3%. And not a peep on the flooding. Not a peep on the imam being shot. Not a peep in Milwaukee in flames. Just golfing in Martha's Vineyard, because he's such a typical, compassionate African-American man. And what's he complaining about? The heat and the global warming. Unbelievable. Of course he makes top five stories of the day. His silence, even more deafening than all of his rhetoric that has ginned all this up. That he can just sit and golf while Rome, or in this case America, burns. That's your top five stories of the day for this Monday, August the 15th, 2016. All right, 88, on our way to a high of 92, already feels like 95 at WTN.